The views and opinions expressed by individuals on the following program do not necessarily reflect those of the network, Guys Guy Radio, and its platforms. It's Guys Guy Radio. Here's your host, Robert Manny.
Welcome to Guys Guys Radio. This is your host, Robert Manny, welcoming you to the show where men and women can be at their best and everyone wins, Guys Guys Radio. We're here to inform you, inspire you, empower you, and get you to think, feel, and who knows, maybe even act by virtue of the journeys, stories, experiences, and insights of the guests I bring you each and every week to the show. Once again, this week is no exception. Today we're going to talk all about Norse mysticism. It's part two with Kadrick Olson, spiritual guide, shadow worker, paranormal mentor. Wow, for over 30 years, he's helped thousands awaken their psychic gifts, clear spirit attachments, rewrite the patterns that sabotage them, and reclaim their sacred power they were born to wield. He's really an amazing guy. I had him over on the show a couple of weeks ago. I want to have him back because he's such a cool guy. He does very unique, special work. He's very articulate, and he's a really nice guy. He's a real guy's guy. Again, he's got 30 years of direct experience with the paranormal, with runes, Norse mysticism, shadow alchemy, spirit communication. You've seen him all over the media. Guy is Beyond Belief with George Norrie, Open Minds with Regina Meredith, Ancient Civilizations, Paraflix, the Aubrey Marcus podcast, Paul Check, and even Guys Guys Radio. And I'm delighted that he is back on Guys Guys Radio. I think you're really going to enjoy the conversation. It's part two. We're going to talk about divine masculinity and some of the challenge we have of it today. We're going to talk about black obsidian mirrors and a lot more right here on Guys Guys Radio.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, Guys Guys Radio, it is the interview portion of our show, and I'm delighted to welcome back a wonderful guest. His name is Kadrick Olson. We're going to dive deep into the mystical side of personal transformation today with Kadrick. You know, Kadrick spent decades exploring the realms of Norse mysticism, shadow work, ancestral healing, and spiritual empowerment. He's been helping people reclaim their inner power and how they can live with clarity, purpose, and connection. And if you've ever wondered about how to align your soul with your path, how to face the darker parts of yourself with courage, and how to tap into ancient wisdom for modern times, this is going to be a great episode for you. So get comfortable. Open your heart and let's explore the unseen with my pal, Kadrick Olson. Welcome back to Guys Guys Radio, Kadrick.
Thank you so much, Robert. I'm glad to be here. This is going to be a good conversation.
So let's get started. Last time we talked about some of your background and how you got into kind of mysticism and Norse mysticism, but let's jump into an area that we touched on briefly last time, and that is shadow integration. What does that really mean, and why is it such a crucial part of spiritual growth?
It's an essential part, and it's so often overlooked because a lot of people really, as they're moving into alternate spiritual paths, most people do tend to find like the New Age community, which is fine. It's a good entry point. And they're about the peace, love, and light. Let's make everything beautiful and wonderful, which is terrific. That I think that's half of the equation. But the other half is getting into the deep, darker places inside us, the stuff that makes us uncomfortable. And ultimately, that's what the shadows are. The shadows are the things inside of us that we're afraid of, that we're ashamed of, that we've pushed down. You know, like let's say an example of a kid growing up. It's a boy who loves to dance and he loves to explore dancing. He sees a dance show and he's trying to dance along with it. But dad's a man's man. Dad's like, that's not what boys do. You need to be learning football. You need to be doing this. And the kid gets in trouble over and over again. And so to protect himself, he stops doing the thing he loves. He stops dancing because he doesn't want to get grounded again. He doesn't want to get yelled at by dad. So he stops dancing. But he had a natural talent for it. He had a natural proclivity. It made him happy. And as he grows older, maybe he's getting into the dating scene and his girlfriend wants to go dancing. And he's like, nope, I don't dance. That's not what men do. But yet he feels that inner longing and it becomes a point of disconnect in relationship. It becomes a point of disconnect within him until he goes through and realizes, you know, this is what dad needed to fit in. This is how dad learned to grow up. And this was dad's shadows about what men are supposed to be like, about how boys are supposed to be like, instead of his authenticity. And when he resolves that, when he integrates that and realizes that he stopped dancing to protect himself from his dad's shadows, and now he doesn't need to be under the thumb of dad, and even dad could criticize him today, but he finds that inner strength to go, you know, dad, I love you. It's fine. I know what you're trying to do. You want to protect me. You want the best for me. I get that. And I love to dance, and I'm going to do it anyway. So he rediscovers his authenticity in dancing. And as we're growing up, the way I like to kind of convey this is in the first 20 years of our life, we have no choice over how the world is dictated to us. Our parents, our teachers, the community, the society around us tells us who we're supposed to be in this world, how we're supposed to think, feel, behave, and act. And if we are divergent from that, if we're outside of that, we get shunned, we get banned, we get ridiculed, blamed. And so we take on the persona of who we need to be to fit in. And that includes, you know, growing up maybe in a very Christian household, but they get older and they're like, I'm more of a nature-based person. I want to explore more of the natural world. But the religion I grew up with said that anything of the physical world is unclean. It's possibly even devilish, but I know it's different. And so they have to come to terms with who they were told to be. And so that's where we get to the next 20 years of life, between 20 and 40, is starting to unravel all the things that we were told about ourselves, about the world, the things we came to believe. That's where we run into, you know, our first Saturn return, where we have to clash with ourselves. And finally, we get into our 40s, and that's where we can start establishing who we are. We can start creating our life. That's really more of a magical time in our lives, is when we get to our 40s, because that's where we get to really not just discover who we are, but live who we are. And shadow work is an essential part of it. I would say actually spiritual growth is a twofold process. One is that spiritual attainment, doing your meditation, doing your connecting to higher forces, bumping your energy up and expanding your consciousness, doing kundalini work or anything like that. But the other part is exploring what's anchoring you, what's holding you down. What are those burdens that you're carrying? And not just expelling them, not banishing them, but integrating them, which means why? Why is this here? Why am I afraid of this? Why does this make me feel ashamed? And really spending time with those emotions, those thoughts, those beliefs, really analyzing those behaviors, which is uncomfortable. We don't want to do that. We don't want to get into that place where we feel shame. We don't want to feel that shame. We don't want to know. We want to push it away and say, nope, I'm just going to peace, love, and light it. anger is a big one that comes up for people, you know, especially in the spiritual communities, because we're told, you know, you have to be peaceful, you have to be loving and compassionate and understanding and accepting. That's great. That's wonderful. However, we still have a brain stem and a limbic system. And when we have a brain stem and a limbic system, we're going to get moments of anger. Something's going to torque us off. And sometimes anger is actually serving us. It's telling us we are important. There are boundaries that we don't cross, that there are certain things that you cannot do to me or you cannot do to other people because it's simply wrong. It's not acceptable. And when we get angry about that, it might be fully justified. However, when we kind of explore some of these alternate spiritual paths, like the New Age community, oh, that's a lower level emotion. That's negativity. You're lowering yourself. You're just bottoming out. You're not meditating enough. You're not doing your spiritual work enough. You're not praying enough. There comes the shame. Oh, I'm not good enough. I can't do this. I'm not great. That's another shadow right there. But if you get involved with your anger, you feel your anger, you explore it. What is this about? Where is it coming from? Why? What can I use my anger for? You suddenly learn that anger has a purpose. It has a function. It's a natural part of being human to get angry. And there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with your spirituality. The real shadow is the blaming yourself for it, accepting the blame, taking on the shame and the ridicule, feeling that you're not worthy because you got angry. But when you release those shadows and you accept that anger as part of you, you become more whole, you become more authentic. And so shadow work in the integration is accepting these deeper, darker things about ourselves, realizing how they actually helped us at one point in our life, but maybe they're not helping now. So give them a new job, give them a new task, a new function in your life, and integrate that and make that who you are, so that now you're going into the world more authentically.
Well, I think that is the best explanation of shadow work and the importance of it and how to do it that I've ever heard. Kadrick Olson, spiritual mentor, guide, and NORS expert. Amazing stuff. Thank you for that. That was really well stated. You know, I'm thinking about that and the different life stages. And one of the other areas that you delve into is masculinity. So let me see if I can pull this together. I have a 12-year-old son. And I wanted him to make sure, sometimes if it was up to him, and I think a lot of young guys are like this nowadays, where they'll do nothing, you know, they're not turned on. And so I said, okay, I'm going to give you, and I think it's important to either integrate with the other kids, because nowadays it's not like everybody get out in the street and play. It's not quite, it's much more organized. So I'm like, I want you to play a team sport or do something individual, it's outdoors, and I'll give you like a choice of six, surfing, baseball, swimming, music, learn a language, or model trains, whatever it is, baseball, and pick a couple of those. And then if you don't like them, we'll switch them up. So he picked baseball and swimming, and I think it's really helped them. And I didn't want to force these on him. So I guess my question is, the sounds like the shadow work is contingent upon us being self-aware. Yes. How can I help my son who's 12 and going through puberty and all of that, seventh grade and all of that stuff, to not be too tough on himself and get himself out there and embrace life instead of having to be pushed into life?
That's a very tricky territory. There's a few different things we can think about. When we're kids, we're going to experience a whole range of emotions because we got the hormones flowing through the body. The biochemistry of the body is just out of whack. And the prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. And the prefrontal cortex is so important because in us adults, it's what helps us understand the consequences of actions. It helps us understand the causal order of things. If you do these things, those things happen, and then those things happen. It gives meaning to situations. It gives meaning. But with teenagers especially, their prefrontal cortex isn't fully developed. It isn't fully developed until we're in our mid-20s. So they don't understand, and they don't have the capacity to understand the full consequences of their actions or the outcomes of things. That's where we adults need to kind of help them learn that and see that. And that's why when we get into our mid-20s, the world changes considerably because we have that deeper grasp of things. And that's why teenagers kind of almost feel immortal you know, that there's nothing going to come of this because they do not have that capacity. So we as adults can help them to understand, well, if this happens and that's going to happen, and how would you feel if that happened? You know, just kind of help them build those critical thinking skills now. The other thing is, because hormones are all over the place, emotions are going to be all over the place, they need to better understand what those emotions are rather than push them down. You know, imagine a teenager getting angry for absolutely no reason. They don't know why. They just kind of want to rage for some reason. And of course, as we as parents, we know the risks of that. We know the potential outcomes of that. So we get triggered too by that. And we're like, just stop it. Cut it out. Just go to your room. Blah, 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 blah. And it's teaching them to push down their anger. It's teaching them that anger is bad, that this rage doesn't have a place in this world. And so we as adults can help them by saying, yep, what you're feeling is this, what you're feeling is that, name that emotion for them. They'll need that. And then offer them a way to express that. Like if he's feeling anger or rage for whatever reason, it's like, great, let's go get out the body bag and punch it. Let's go grab a stick in the backyard and start beating up a rock, you know, go yell into a pillow, you know, have them be aware that it's okay to feel those emotions and that there is a good way to express them. And then even help him to know that in those moments of anger or rage, when they come up, how can you get to a more respectful place to speak to other people, to recognize, yep, I'm feeling this, but I don't want the negative consequences if I say something or do something that comes back to me. So how is a way that we can still say, you know, I'm really angry, I'm really pissed off right now, and I just want to smash something, but I understand what you're saying, you know, and maybe say, hey, this is a conversation maybe we need to put a pin in and come back later. Let's go beat up a rock or something right now. Let's go just get this out. That's one of a great way we can help kids. And then the other way I like to explore masculinity is through archetypes. And in our culture, we've been shown a very limited set of archetypes. You know, there's the bro, the butthead bro, that's just like, hey, let's go lift weights. Let's go drive our car real fast. Let's drink and get some babes, you know. And they tend to be a little more aggressive because they've got to prove themselves. They got to show off, you know, they got a peacock. They got to be there like, ah. Another archetype that we've been given is sort of like the workaholic corporate executive. And we assign greed and psychopathy to that. You know, they don't care who they hurt. They don't care what they're going to do. They just want money, and they're going to work hard and ignore their families and work, work, work. And that is still another archetype we're given, the worker. You know, how many times have we heard that the harder you work, the more money you're going to make, that you have to go to school, you have to go get a job and work hard, and everybody hates their job. We're told that everybody hates their job. So love the weekend, work for the weekend, and you'll enjoy life much better. And then all of that, there's a reactionary couple of archetypes that show up. The screw you, I hate everything. I'm going to just mess up my life because I hate it all. Or the wet noodle, where they're just overly permissive, just like, I don't want to be aggressive. And these people have been too aggressive, and they just kind of shut down and they let people walk all over them. And so it helps if we can show our kids these various archetypes, how they show up, and to see if that's not who they want to be. Then we can show them more positive archetypes. You know, there's a great book out there. I think it's by Robert Johnson and Weather Guy. And I'm going to mess up the title, but it's like King, Wizard, Warrior, something like that. It's, you know, got four different names for archetypes.
Okay.
But show them like what the warrior archetype is, how they train, how they're disciplined, how the reason why the warrior does what the warrior does isn't because of what's in front of him, but because what's behind him, the things he's protecting, the things he's preserving, that he doesn't have to show off and showboat because he already knows what he's doing. But he also knows his vulnerabilities and his weaknesses and can build alliances to shore up those weaknesses. Or like the wizard priest type archetype, where they dig deep into esoteric stuff, the hidden materials, they're learning, they're studying. So there's a wide range of archetypes. And when I work with men, I've got about 13, 14 archetypes of sacred masculinity, where I talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, and I help people to identify, you know, what parts of this archetype fit in with you. And I help men to design their own archetype based on that. Who are you authentically? What works for you from the warrior? What works for you from the king? What works for you from the craftsman, from the destroyer, from the rebel? You know, they have a place in our world too. And so they get to piece together sacred masculinity for themselves. Instead of being told who they're supposed to be, they define themselves. And that's a bit of trial and error. That's a bit of trying on new clothes and seeing what fits, what doesn't fit, and going out into the world expressing that. And so I would say help him to learn those various archetypes and what resonates best with him so that he can present himself authentically in the world rather than who he's being told to be or who he's supposed to be. So he gets to define that world and his life for himself.
That was another absolutely amazing answer. Thank you for that. Kadric Olson, spiritual mentor and guide, Noor's expert. You emphasize a lot the power of ancestry and spiritual lineage. How can someone reconnect with their ancestors, even if they know little about their family history?
It's a great question, because that can get some challenging territory. Like, you know, we don't know who we are. We don't know where we come from. But fortunately, you know, there's services out there like Ancestry.com or 23andMe. I'm not sure what's out there anymore, but we can, use that to tap into where our ancestors came from. And we got to be cautious here as well, because maybe somebody does find some European ancestry. They're looking into it and it doesn't resonate with them. It just doesn't click and they don't know why. And that's okay. But maybe they're exploring something more of the Eastern, you know, maybe Zen or Buddhism or the Vedic path. And that resonates with them. And so that opens up that spiritual lineage outside of physical lineage. So it's ultimately tapping into yourself. But what you want to do is kind of go into that blank meditative state, open-minded state, and ask yourself, who are my ancestors here and now? Who is it that I can connect with? And even feel like, you know, what it feels like to be with your parents, what it feels like to be with grandparents, or imagine it, what it might have felt like to be with great grandparents. And if you've got like some services like ancestry.com, sometimes you get photographs of these people, and just kind of let yourself feel it, not think about it, because the thinking distorts it. The thinking kind of messes it up, but go into the feeling. And again, this is another challenge for men, because we're taught not to feel. Don't let yourself feel. So sometimes men have to take some more time to give themselves permission. What is this feeling? Because that feeling holds that answer. And then tap into that feeling. And the little key piece here is when we're working with the spiritual matters, similarities attract and perpetuate. Meaning whatever you are resonating at, whatever you're tuning yourself into, you're going to connect with. And so if you're feeling that family line, the feeling, and that's an energy. That energy is resonating within you, and those ancestors will start to come in, and you'll start to feel their presence. Maybe you'll be able to communicate with them in the way that they communicate. Maybe they'll give you little nudges, little hints, little pieces and parts there. They become like a guide for you that will help you tap in better for what works for you as you work with that. And then set up like an ancestry altar, put pictures up, put candles, put incense. And it's almost like a reverence, not a worship, but respect and reverence for who these people were, what they went through, the wisdom that they can share with you. And the more you tap into that, the more it becomes a little subtle guidance, not overt. Nothing's going to tell you, like, you have to do this. Right. It'll be like, this might be an interesting idea if I explored that. I wonder what that is. You know, it'll come across like that. And just let it unfold. And I love the idea of taking the fool's path with this. Meaning you don't know what you're doing. You don't know where you're going, but you're curious what's going to come of the exploration. And so you tap into it. And maybe you tap into an ancestor. You want to connect with them. And they're a jerk. They're like, oh, gods, I don't want to be anything like that. Or maybe you find something awful in your ancestry. That happens, you know. There's a lot of things in human history that is just not acceptable to today's time. Well, that's not somebody you want to work with. But keep looking. Keep digging. And little by little, they'll reveal themselves. They'll show up. The more you tune in, the more they're going to be there, and the more they'll become a part of your life. But it takes a little bit of work.
Let's, if we can, Kadric, let's kick that up a notch. How about when you're talking about your star lineage? Are there ways to tap into that to try to find out, am I an Andromeda? Am I from Andromeda or Arcturian? Am I Assyrian? Am I where am I from? And how can my quote unquote star family help me?
And we got to be. I want to approach this from two different ways here.
Okay.
The first way, I'm going to kind of torque off some people. That sometimes looking into our starseed origins, which is a valid thing, and I didn't think so until a few years ago, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But when we are curious about starseed origins, we have to also look at it. Are we doing this as an escapism? Because so many people I've seen that are tapping into the starseed world have said, why don't they just come here and get me? They drop me off here. I don't want to be here anymore. Get me out of here. That's escapism. That's like, I don't like what the world is here, so get me out of here. I don't want to be a part of this anymore. When we have to realize the starseed mission is to be here now at this time because it is not so good, because it can be so awful, and those feelings that it's awful that you want to get out of here means that something needs to change. And if you're a starseed, you're here to initiate that change, not overtly, not dramatically, mm-hmm. but very subtly through the things we're doing. So we have to be careful. Are we approaching this escapism because I want to get out of here? Or are we approaching this like, okay, I'm tuned into something higher. I have a connection to a higher source. Let's bring that into this world. Let's face these challenges together. You know, it's right along the lines of, I don't care whoever has been voted in president, but we've seen it every single presidential cycle. Somebody gets voted into office and there's a whole range of people going, well, I'm moving to Canada. I'm moving to Europe. I'm getting out of here. It's going to go to hell. And my thought on that is, why are you escaping? If you don't like it, be a part of the change in the direction that you want, because you're just getting away from it and the problem's going to continue perpetuating if you aren't doing something about it. Now, how I got into this is, even though I grew up with the paranormal, even though I've been involved in the esoteric, the metaphysical, the supernatural stuff my entire life, and I know for a fact it's real, I'm still always open-mindedly skeptical. You know, I'll say it a bunch of times, mm-hmm. but if somebody calls me and says that there's a spirit in their house flicking on the lights and they keep going on and off, the first thing I say is, what did the electrician say? Did you check in with the electrician?
I love it.
You know, because I want to eliminate the mundane possibilities. And that's how I approach this whole thing. Let's look at the mundane possibilities first, because even if it's 99% of the time a mundane answer, a everyday answer, we still get that 1% that makes it amazing, that makes it valid, that makes it true, that makes it authentic. And to me, that's what makes it all the more amazing. So to this day, I have not yet had of spacecraft land in front of me and a physical extraterrestrial come out, but I have had other less kind of experiences. You know, I feel that I've had like the abduction experience. You know, I've had these memories of floating in an electric green light, being inside something where there's electric green light everywhere, a guy telling me, do you remember the numbers we gave you? And then my wife would be like, when she woke me up, she was like, you keep muttering in your sleep. I got to do the numbers. I got to work on the math. Waking up with weird marks on the body. You know, one time went to bed with silver spray paint all over my hands, black sheets, black pillowcases. Woke up the next morning after one of these electric green light dreams, and there's no silver spray paint. And you know how spray paint is.
Yeah, sure.
How hard it is to get off. It's gone. It's nowhere to be found. I'm like, how is that possible? You know, I fully expected to go through the next 2 or 3 days with spray paint all over my hands. No, it was gone by morning. I was like, and it's not on the bed sheets. It's not on the pillowcases anywhere. So something happened. Now, how the starseed thing kind of came up is when I work with clients one-on-one, I invite my guides, the whisperers in, mm-hmm. and then I invite their guides in. And I'm having these multiple conversations when I'm working with them. And I kept starting to notice blue people showing up. And I'm like, blue people, what's going on with this? And so I'm tapping into the energy of the blue people. I'm listening to their message. I'm getting a good feel of who these blue people are. And then for sure, my clients, I've noticed their spirit, their soul is resonating with the same energy of these blue people. And I'm like, what's going on here?
Pleiadians?
Yeah, not Pleiadians, but okay. Arcturians, Andromedans.
Okay.
Even the old Lyrians.
Mm-hmm.
Blue people, there are various types out there. And I realize, oh, these are the souls of these blue people incarnating into human bodies. And then my whisper said, okay, you ready for this? And they unfolded like a whole shadow work program for healing the starseed wound. What caused the starseed wound, how that works, why they're here, why right now is the importance of doing the shadow work, specific shadow work for starseeds. And of course, me and my stubbornness, I'm like, no. You know, I type it up, I put it together, and I'm like, no, I'm not doing this. This is ridiculous. I'm not going to have this happen. But then sure enough, in a Gaia interview, we're talking and talking. At the end of the interview, I'm talking about the starseed wound. And I'm like, I didn't even remember that until people came back up to me and started asking about that. And I'm like, did I bring that up? Did I talk about that? Really? And I watched the interview and I'm like, yep, there it is. And then within 2 weeks, every single one of my clients, every single one of my students, without a prompt from me, started asking about starseeds and shadow work. And I'm like, all right, I get the hint. I'll put this out. I put together the course. I put it up online. You know, it's online and available right now, the Healing the Starseed Wound. And so I just had to come to terms with the fact that, yes, starseeds are real. They're here. That some people are using it as an escapism, but other people aren't. And I'll tell you a bit about what the starseed wound is. These beings are, let's say, fifth density or higher. We are in the third density with linear time. They exist outside of linear time. That's why some of these things are so difficult for us. How long do they live? What point in time are they? Are they from the future? Are they from the past? It doesn't matter. They don't exist in time like we do. And given that, given the fact that they're fifth, sixth, seventh density, and we're third density, they just can't come into a human body instantly. They can't. They don't have the same resonant level. They're not at third density. So in order to down-res, they show up in humanity's past, back when times were more brutal, a bit more savage. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they had the brutal things done to them. Most of the time, they were the people doing the brutal things, because that karmically binds them to humanity. That inserts them into the collective unconsciousness, and that sets up that sort of karmic debt, that karmic experience that they need to work through. Mm-hmm. That sets up that inner pain, the wound that was created. And that was an agreement made that they come in the past, they incarnate multiple times as a human being, doing awful things, having awful things done to them. So they have a personal firsthand experience. And then they incarnate in this time period where we are now, where humanity is on this precipice of growth, where we're ready to move beyond that. And their work is to do that shadow work, to go into the pain they caused, to go into the pain they felt, to heal that wound, to get through that wound, because that's what most of humanity has experienced. I mean, look at the Middle Ages, the brutality, the torture, the genocides that happened through the Middle Ages. There's a lot of souls that refuse to come back and reincarnate because they don't want to go through that again. But as these starseeds are working through their wound, they're working through that karmic debt, they're healing it, they're also inserting that information into the collective unconscious of, this is how you heal your own wounds. This is how you do your own shadow work. This is how you reach that higher state of spirituality. And so by doing their own shadow work, by doing their own work, by engaging their own pain, their own suffering, it hurts, it sucks, it feels awful. But by clearing yourself of that burden, you're teaching all of humanity how to do that as well, so that it helps humanity reach through this precipice that we're on, so that we move into that next stage, so we can move past the fear-based narratives, past the us versus them mentality that has just really run humanity since ancient time periods. And so that's what starseeds are here for. No matter the various worlds that they're from, no matter what they're doing, is they're here to heal themselves individually so that it heals the collectively.
Now, they say that there's a, some people say 144,000, some people say 80 million. Any sense from maybe the whisperers as to how many starseeds are actually incarnated on Earth at this time?
No, they don't do any sort of quantities or anything like that. They can't quantify anything, but it is a small segment of the population. But, you know, even if we talk 1%, that's still millions of people.
Of course. Okay.
So it's a small segment of the population, but it is enough to create that over the hump, you know, getting, it's enough to move the needle to change vectors of what humanity is on.
Okay. My special guest on Guys, Guys Radio, returning and amazing as usual, Kadric Olson, a spiritual guide, NORS expert, spiritual mentor also. Just amazing conversation we're having. So I want to touch on something that that you are known for. You're known for your deep work with the black obsidian mirror. It's a tool with ancient roots in divination and shadow exploration. For people who are unfamiliar with this, Kadric, what exactly is the obsidian mirror? How is it used in your spiritual practice?
Excellent question. Yeah, the black mirror, it can be made of many substances. Obsidian is one. Some cultures used a bowl, like a black bowl full of water, or they put some ink in the water to make the water black. The materials that I like to use today is paint and glass. Literally, just paint and glass. Go to the hobby store or whatever store, buy a picture frame that you like, take it apart, spray paint the back of it with matte black, flat black paint, put it back together, and you're ready to go. And the thing to keep in mind is it's just paint and glass. It's just obsidian stone. It's just a bowl of water. It's nothing more than just anything mundane like that. However, staring into this deep reflective surface, and I'll give you kind of a weird metaphor for it in a minute. Staring into that deep reflective surface alters your perception. It alters your vision. It alters the way you see things. And ultimately, it alters your state of consciousness. And in that sense, you become the portal. You become the means to connect with other beings, other realms, other planets, other states of existence. And you open this channel through the black mirror so that you can communicate with these beings. Now, the metaphor came about when somebody asked me once, what's the difference between like a silver mirror, like we use everywhere, versus a black mirror? Why the black mirror? And this is not the exact mechanism that works, but the metaphor helps. When we've got a silver mirror, like we have everywhere else, light is reflecting off of it. Light goes into it, bounces off, and it comes back. With a black mirror, the color black absorbs everything. Think of it as absorbing. And so whatever energy you're putting into it, whatever light is going into it, is being absorbed into the blackness. But because it's a portal, the same thing is happening on the other side. It's absorbing light and energy and information from the other side, and it's coming through. So it appears like a reflection, but it's not a reflection. It's just energy moving through to appear. Now, and again, it's just a metaphor. This is not exactly it. If you were to look at the glass and you were to see it, it's light bouncing off. But when we're getting into that portal stage, that's where we can use it as a means to open to our starseed lineage, where we can open to guides, teachers, loved ones. We can open to the afterlife, spirit world, connect with loved ones, and then that energy moves back and forth through it, and it becomes a means of communication, contact, communion, energy exchange, downloads. It's a great resource, a great tool for all of those things.
All right. So this is just for our audience. This is not a toy, and you need some protection, and you should be training with somebody like yourself. You don't just get the mirror and start playing with it, because you're participating. You're not just witnessing and looking at it. It's coming through. So those energies are there. And I would think you need some type of grounding and protection. Is that correct?
Exactly. When I teach people to use the black mirror, the very first thing is grounding. What does it feel like to be here in the time and space of here and now? Because we purposefully induce that state where you get lost on the other side of the mirror. You're on the other side. You don't know which side of the mirror you're on. Where am I? And so if a moment of concern comes up, a moment of fear, you just take a breath. You feel yourself grounded. You're back on this side of the mirror. You're here. The other thing is two rules to keep in mind is every paranormal experience is co-created 100% of the time. We are actively involved. You can't remove the observer from the effect ever. And the second is what I said earlier, similarities attract and perpetuate. So when you're grounded, when you're rooted in the time and space of here and now, and you connect with the mirror, you let yourself think, feel, experience what it's like to connect with the people, the beings, the places that you want to connect with, and your own feeling becomes that energy that tunes that portal to connect with those beings. And so if you're not in a fear state, if you're not in an apprehensive state, you're tuned into the higher states of consciousness or tuned into a loved one, that's the only thing you can connect with. You can't have a bad time with it. You could only be in sacred space in that way.
Amazing. That's a really powerful, Kedrick. And is the idea that the black obsidian mirror doesn't just show us our reflection, but also what lies beneath it. It's a reminder that real strength and growth come from having the courage to look within, to face our own shadows and find wisdom there. Amazing.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
You can use them. Oh, sorry.
And you can
use the mirror for shadow work, to talk with your shadow and really connect with your shadow, like an archetype or a being, and help to heal it through the black mirror. It's a powerful tool for that.
Okay. Just to let everybody know, I mean, if you want to work with Kedrick, and we'll get into some of the specifics in a few minutes because we're running short on time, but spiritual protection, haunted encounters, divine rage, psychic awakening, shadow work with the spiritually divergent, real stories of the afterlife. He's got courses in so many different things, paranormal protection, paranormal awareness, just afterlife codex. Everything that you cover is something that things that can be helpful in this life here and now. So thank you for doing the work you're doing. I was hoping, Kedrick, that for the last few moments, we could maybe communicate a little bit with the Whisperers. The Whisperers are a collective that you have been working with for many, many years.
Yes.
Anything you want to say about who they are and what they, you know, so the audience has kind of has a sense as to how they communicate through you?
Absolutely. They're beings that have been with me since childhood. I remember being on the playground in school talking with them. They have guided me through every stage of my life, you know, going through the dark night of the soul, going through spiritual growth, helping to develop the coursework that's coming out. A lot of this came from the Whisperers, but I never take it at face value. I always test it, make sure it actually works before I give it to anybody, because I want to make sure I'm just not making up stuff, that this is really valid information coming through. And that's also part of the agreement I had with them years ago. I'm like, this is great theory, this is great information, but what do we do with it? How do we use it? And I actually said to them, stop giving me information unless you give me practical ways people can make use of this and put it into use. And the only way I can come to describe them is their higher levels of intelligences. Maybe they were human at some time, some were never. They don't have bodies now. They are spiritual, energetic beings. Most of them don't even have form or shape. They're just like consciousness, just kind of awareness. And the biggest way they communicate is with downloads, with gnosis, just receiving like a packet of information. It unpacks, but sometimes they communicate through, sometimes they're able to, and they told me, I actually asked them about this, when they are communicating through me, they aren't doing it. They have to use an intermediary that can step down their level of information, have it interpreted through this intermediary, which is what then works through me, because they can't communicate directly that way, because they just can't.
All right. Let me, if possible, could we ask them, welcome the Whisperers and ask one or two questions?
Absolutely.
So in today's Whisperers, welcome and thank you. In today's day and age, so many things are happening right now, and the screws keep getting tighter. Everybody feels like they're under a lot of pressure, and it's all been a lot of talk about, this is a time where so many things are going to be revealed. So many things that are going to break, shatter our beliefs that we've had for, that have been actually illogical, that we've had and lived with for centuries. Are we in a time where this is going to happen in the immediate future? And if so, what do we need to know today?
This is something that's always been happening for humanity. This is how you grow. You establish an order. You establish a process. It becomes corrupt. It starts to denigrate from within. And then you start to build something new. The old corrupt systems fall away. And then the new thing becomes established order. And it becomes corrupt. And it disintegrates. And then you build something new. What worked for the ancient Egyptians won't work for you today. What worked for the Atlanteans won't work for you today. What will work for you today is the disruption that you're experiencing, is the denigration and the corruption that you're seeing today. That is a part of your collective shadow work. This is not the last time humanity will experience this. This will be a continuing cycle for a long time. But remember, with every new birth of the cycle, humanity reaches a higher state of being, a higher pinnacle of existence. Just a few hundred years ago, what was considered acceptable behavior to all of you is now thoroughly reprehensible to most, but not all. There will always be some of those lingering fragments to remind us of where you came from, to remind us of who you used to be, so that you don't fall back into that cycle. You are growing. You will continue to grow. And if you look at the corruption, if you look at the denigration, the disintegration happening all around you as the end, this is it. If you feel helpless, if you feel hopeless, then you're getting sucked into that wave. You're getting pulled into that wave of zeitgeist that will drown you. It's not meant to do that. It's meant to be a reminder of what you can rise above, what you can work through. Just as we talked about shadows before, as those deep, dark, ugly things that you don't want to look at, these are the deep, dark, ugly things of humanity that are coming to the surface, not to be hidden, not to be shamed, not to be destroyed, but to be embraced, to be understood, to be accepted. This is what it meant, past tense, to be human, so that you now get to collectively work to redefine what it means to be human.
Thank you so much, Whisperers. And thank you, Kadrick, thank you for sharing your wisdom and light today. It's been a fascinating journey through the realms of shadow, soul, self-mastery. I hope you come back again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. I'm here.
All right.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, another fascinating conversation with our friend Kadrick Olson. Again, he's had so much experience dealing with the paranormal, whether it's mysticism, shadow alchemy, runes, the black obsidian mirror that we talked about today, as well as shadow work and how kind of masculinity has shifted and how we need for guys, particularly here on Guys Guys Radio, how we need to kind of get our hands wrapped around that so we can move forward with pride in who we are and an understanding as to what it means to be a man in today's world. And it's all good if you do the work. And it starts out by you have to work on yourself. You have to go inside. You have to learn about some of the things you did that maybe you didn't like about yourself and how to process them through so you can be the best version of yourself. I think you need some guidance. Kadrick has a lot of courses in this, a lot of teachings. You could pick up his book. I think would be super helpful to you if you want to take on some of the work he does on yourself. You want to know how to work with them the right way. Now, working with runes or tarot cards or something like that, it's not really nothing, there's no real danger in that. But if you get into stuff like seances and the obsidian mirror, you want to have some protection. You don't want to goof around with that. And you want to work with somebody who has some real experience. So check out Kadrick, and we'll have him back again here on Guys Guys Radio because he's a real guys guy. He's very interesting. He's certainly different. And I think he adds some real value to the show. So we'll see you again, Kadrick. Okay, thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Guys Guys Radio on UK Health Radio. We're back next week with another great show. And until then, like I always say, guys, finish first.